Chapter 92. No, no, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, sweetly. No, no, no. Apostrophe, by what arts or unhappy chances you have gained your influence over Mr. Chuzzlewit, I do not know, apostrophe said Mary. It may be strong enough to soften even this, but he shall know of this. Trust me, sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff raised his heavy eyelids languidly, and let them fall again. It was saying with perfect coolness, I, indeed. Apostrophe, is it not enough, apostrophe said Mary, that he warp, and change his nature, adapt his every prejudice to your bad ends, and harden a heart naturally kind, by shutting out the truth and allowing none, but false and distorted views to reach it. Is it not enough, that you have the power of doing this, and that you exercise it, but must you also be so coarse, so cruel, and so cowardly to me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, still Mr. Pecksniff led her calmly on, and looked as mild as any lamb that ever pastured in the fields. Will nothing move you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mary. My dear, apostrophe observed Mr. Pecksniff, with a placid leer, a habit of self-examination, and the practice of, shall I say, of virtue? Apostrophe, apostrophe, of hypocrisy, apostrophe said Mary. No, no, apostrophe resumed Mr. Pecksniff, chafing the captive hand reproachfully, a virtue have enabled me to set such guards upon myself, that it is really difficult to ruffle me. It is a curious fact, but it is difficult, do you know, for anyone to ruffle me. And did she think, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, with a playful tightening of his grasp, that she could? How little did she know his heart? Apostrophe, little, indeed. Her mind was so strangely constituted, that she would have preferred the caresses of a toad, an adder, or a serpent, nay, the hug of a bear, to the endearments of Mr. Pecksniff. Come, come, apostrophe said that good gentleman, a word or two will set this matter right, and establish a pleasant understanding between us. I am not angry, my love. Apostrophe, you angry. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, I am not. I say so. Neither are you. Apostrophe, there was a beating heart beneath his hand, that told another story though. I am sure you are not, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff. And I will tell you why. There are two Martin Chuzzlewits, my dear, and your carrying your anger to one might have a serious effect, who knows, upon the other. You wouldn't wish to hurt him, would you? Apostrophe, she trembled violently, and looked at him with such a proud disdain, that he turned his eyes away. No doubt lest he should be offended with her in spite of his better self. A passive quarrel, my love, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, may be changed into an active one, remember. It would be sad to blight even a disinherited young man in his already blighted prospects. But how easy to do it. Ah, how easy. Have I influence with our venerable friend, do you think? Well, perhaps I have. Perhaps I have. Apostrophe, he raised his eyes to hers, and nodded with an air of banter that was charming. No, apostrophe, he continued, thoughtfully. Upon the whole, my sweet, if I were you, I'd keep my secret to myself. I am not at all sure, very far from it, that it would surprise our friend in any way, for he and I have had some conversation together only this morning, and he is anxious, very anxious, to establish you in some more settled manner. But whether he was surprised or not surprised, the consequence of your imparting it might be the same. Martin Jr. might suffer severely. I'd have compassion on Martin Jr., do you know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, with a persuasive smile. Yes. He don't deserve it, but I would. Apostrophe, she wept so bitterly now, and was so much distressed, that he thought it prudent to unclasp her waist, and hold her only by the hand. As to our own share in the precious little mystery, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, we will keep it to ourselves, and talk of it between ourselves, and you shall think it over. You will consent, my love, you will consent, I know. Whatever you may think, you will. I seem to remember to have heard I really don't know where or how, he added, with bewitching frankness, that you and Martin Jr., when you were children, had a sort of childish fondness for each other. When we are married, you shall have the satisfaction of thinking that it didn't last to ruin him, but passed away to do him good. For we'll see then what we can do to put some trifling help in Martin Jr.'s way. Have I any influence with our venerable friend? Well, perhaps I have. Perhaps I have. Apostrophe, the outlet from the wood in which these tender passages occurred, was close to Mr. Pecksniff's house. They were now so near that he stopped, and holding up her little finger, said in playful accents, as a parting fancy, "Shall I bite it?" Receiving no reply, he kissed it instead, and then stooping down, inclined his flabby face to hers. He had a flabby face, although he was a good man, and with a blessing, which from such a source was quite enough, to set her up in life, and prosper her from that time forth, permitted her to leave him. Gallantry in its true sense is supposed to ennoble and dignify a man, and love has shed refinements on innumerable Simons. But Mr. Pecksniff, perhaps, because to one of his exalted nature these were mere grossnesses, certainly did not appear to any unusual advantage, now that he was left alone. On the contrary, he seemed to be shrunk and reduced, to be trying to hide himself within himself, and to be wretched at not having the power to do it. His shoes looked too large, his sleeve looked too long, his hair looked too limp, his features looked too mean, his exposed throat looked as if a halter would have done it good. For a minute or two, in fact, he was hot, and pale, and mean, and shy, and slinking, and consequently not at all Pecksniffian. But after that, he recovered himself, and went home with as beneficent an air, as if he had been the high priest of the summer weather. "I have arranged to go, Papa," said Charity, "tomorrow." "So soon, my child." "I can't go too soon," said Charity, "under the circumstances. I have written to Mrs. Todgers to propose an arrangement, and have requested her to meet me at the coach, at all events. You'll be quite your own master now, Mr. Pinch." Mr. Pecksniff had just gone out of the room, and Tom had just come into it. "My own master?" repeated Tom. "Yes, you'll have nobody to interfere with you," said Charity. "At least I hope you won't. Hem. It's a changing world." "What, are you going to be married, Miss Pecksniff?" asked Tom in great surprise. "Not exactly," faltered Jerry. "I haven't made up my mind to be. I believe I could be, if I chose, Mr. Pinch."
"Of course you could."
said Tom. And he said it in perfect good faith. He believed it from the bottom of his heart. "No," said Jerry, "I am not going to be married. Nobody is, that I know of. Hem. But I am not going to live with Papa. I have my reasons, but it's all a secret. I shall always feel very kindly towards you, I assure you, for the boldness you showed that night. As to you and me, Mr. Pinch, we part the best friends possible." Tom thanked her for her confidence, and for her friendship, but there was a mystery in the former which perfectly bewildered him. In his extravagant devotion to the family, he had felt the loss of Mary more than anyone but those who knew that for all the slights he underwent he thought his own demerits were to blame, could possibly have understood. He had scarcely reconciled himself to that, when here was Charity about to leave them. She had grown up, as it were, under Tom's eye. The sisters were a part of Pecksniff, and a part of Tom. Items in Pecksniff's goodness, and in Tom's service. He couldn't bear it. Not 2 hours sleep had Tom that night, through dwelling in his bed upon these dreadful changes. When morning dawned he thought he must have dreamed this piece of ambiguity,
But no, on going downstairs he found them packing trunks and cording boxes, and making other preparations for Miss Charity's departure, which lasted all day long. A good time for the evening coach, Miss Charity deposited her housekeeping keys with much ceremony upon the parlor table, took a gracious leave of all the house, and quitted her paternal roof a blessing for which the Picksniffian servant was observed by some profane persons to be particularly active in the Thanksgiving at church next Sunday. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.